And more.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we will start by entertaining a motion to approve the minutes from our April meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then we are actually going to move up swearing in. Thank you all for being here today. I know you're here for one reason. You're of course welcome to stay for the entire meeting, but we can have all the officers that are being sworn in come up.
So Jacob Bauer, Danielle Gonzalez, Lester Webb II, and Joe Bonasek. If you guys could please come forward.
You know, am I better to stay here actually to have a microphone or should I go?
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. You have to be near the microphone.
Yeah, if you all could step up to there. Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Jacob Bauer.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution.
That I will support the Constitution.
And the laws of the United States of America.
And the laws of the United States of America.
The Constitution and the laws of the State of Ohio.
The Constitution and the laws of the State of Ohio.
And the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And I will discharge the duties of the office of officer.
And I will discharge the duties of the office of officer.
To which I have been appointed.
To which I have been appointed.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
I will faithfully carry out and implement.
I will faithfully carry out and implement.
The policies enunciated.
The policies enunciated.
And the instructions given to me by the Board of Park Commissioners.
And the instructions given to me by the Board of Park Commissioners.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God.
This I promise to do as I answer unto God.
Almost, almost.
Congratulations.
Chief, if you'd like to say something, they've got a sign.
Yeah, if you could all go to Karen.
I need you guys over here, please.
No, good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for coming. This is a monumental day for our police department here in the Cleveland Metro Parks. I would like to just personally thank Brian, the Board of Commissioners, Chief Harold Harrison, Director of Human Resources, Christine Singer for our hiring process. We're very excited. And I want to thank all of my fellow brothers and sisters for coming here today too, because it's great to see you in support all of our new officers and our new two lieutenants who will be sworn in soon. So again, Brian, thank you very much for the leadership and direction allowing me to bring this department to where we need to be. I appreciate it very much.
Very good. Jacob comes to us from Akron Children's Hospital. He graduated with honors from Kent State University with a Bachelor of Arts in Criminology. Danielle Gonzalez comes to Metro Parks from Mercy Health in Lorraine. He served as a police officer since 2017. He completed his OPATA training and received his certificate from Lorraine Community College. Lester joins us from the city of Cleveland, where he's served in the 5th District since 2016. And Joseph comes to us from after retiring from Rocky River, and he'll be spending time on Lake Erie. The recommended action appointing Jacob Bauer, Danielle Gonzalez, Lester Webb II, and Joe Bonasek as a part-time police officer is on the mid portion of page 9.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you so much. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Next up, we have two promotions, Sarah Petrucci and Matthew Sharon. If you could please move forward.
Brian, also Moore.
We're going to leave them all together.
Okay, and Charlie Moore. Well, all right then. Where is Captain Moore?
He's Charlie. In the corner.
Charlie, you actually...
Hiding in the back there.
You wanted to buy your dog?
All right, if you could all please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Matthew Shermer.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution.
That I will support the Constitution.
And the laws of the United States of America.
And the laws of the United States of America.
The Constitution and laws of the State of Ohio.
The Constitution and laws of the State of Ohio.
And the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And I will discharge the duties of the office of, please insert your office.
And I will discharge the duties of the office of the captain.
To which I have been appointed.
To which I have been appointed.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
And I will faithfully carry out and implement.
And I will faithfully carry out and implement.
The policies enunciated.
The policies enunciated.
And the instructions given to me by the Board of Park Commissioners.
And the instructions given to me by the Board of Park Commissioners.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God.
This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God.
Got it.
Congratulations.
Lieutenants and Captain, on behalf of my office, I want to welcome you to your new positions. Welcome you to furthering your career with this great department that we have. And I look forward to working with each and every one of you for many, many years to come. Congratulations.
Sarah joined Cleveland Metro Parks in 2014. She was appointed, promoted to sergeant in 2018. She came to us from the state watercraft officer of the Department of Natural Resources. She has arrived, since she's arrived, she worked as a part-time marine patrol officer, field training officer, physical fitness specialist, recruitment officer, ice rescue, motorcycle unit. She attended Bowling Green State University. Matthew Sherrin joined the park in 2013. He was promoted to sergeant of the Marine Patrol in 2018. Prior to his service, he was in the city of Sylvania. He has done a wide variety of jobs for Cleveland Metro Parks, served a tour in the U.S. Coast Guard Reserve. He received his Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Toledo in Criminal Justice. Would we like to do that recommended action?
Should we still do them separately or?
That's the.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 10, appointing Sarah Petrucci and Matthew Sherrin to lieutenants.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Captain Charlie Moore joined the department in August of 2006. During his tenure with the department, he served as a sergeant for 6 years, promoted to lieutenant in 2018. He has stepped up to be the interim captain of the patrol under the direction of Chief Stillman. He handles the directing, managing, and supervising, coordinating of all the activities of the department, including the implementation of policies and procedures and coordinating and overseeing the patrol personnel. Captain Moore exemplifies the true definition of protect and serve, and we would like to thank him for his continued and strong leadership. His appointment falls on the mid portion of page 10 to the position of full-time captain.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Congratulations.
Thank you all for being here today. As we said, you're welcome to stay for the rest of our meeting, or you can go outside, enjoy this beautiful day, take some pictures. But very glad to have you all on board. So we'll take a moment if folks want to actually.
Yes.
Yes.
Would everybody wants to go outside or get some photos, family, new options, movies,
congrats. Your kids are growing.
Congratulations.
Aren't they adorable?
Yeah, they really are.
Wow.
How to clear out a room.
Cleaned house.
Swedish fish.
Congratulations. All right, a little quieter now.
See, we should have kept him.
Yeah.
We will move into the financial report. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. And if I can, before I begin, I would just like to thank Brian, as well as the three commissioners, for the opportunity to be sitting here with you today. It's been a
busy 4 weeks, but it's been an enjoyable, I don't know how to describe it, other than it's been a thrill. It's been absolutely great. And the finance report now for the month of April. And if I can, I'd like to begin with a little bit of a lead-in, because this is going to color all of the comments that I share today. When you look at March of 2022, as well as April of 2022, we're so driven by weather. We had 6 sunny days in the month of April. And we had snow in the middle of the month.
Cruelest month.
This is not happening.
In the month of March of this year, we had 5 sunny days. So in those 2 months, we've had 11 sunny days out of 61 days. And as we'll talk about when we get to golf, Damien tells me that a rainy day or a non-sunny day on a Saturday is really hard to make up. You can afford it on a Tuesday, but when you lose a whole day of golf revenue on a Saturday or a Sunday, it's really difficult. So we want to have that as a backdrop. We've just had really, really tough weather this year, especially in April. So when we look at April of 22 compared to April of 21, April of 21 was a beautiful month, record setting. So that's going to be a comment you'll hear. I thought we should just start with that, so we don't have to keep reminding everyone how bad the weather is. We know that. The upside is the weather in May has been wonderful. And in talking with Chris at the zoo, you don't want to jinx anything, but they're having a good May so far. We're 2/3 of the way in. The weather's been pretty good and everything's been going well. So if we can, I'll.
So the weather is not Wade's fault, is what he's saying? He's merely putting that on the record.
Sound like Al Roker.
Okay. Even the wheat was delayed getting in. That's what.
Okay. 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So here's the Metro Parks as a whole. And let me see, does this go? Okay. Property tax. The only comment is we're through the first half collection now, fully there. Favorable variance, and we say favorable above the prior year by 1.6 million. Tax collection date usually ends late January, early February. You can take some advances up to 90% based upon collections, and that impacts timing in January, February, March. By April, you have that whole first half's collection in, and it's settled out, so we're in good shape there. Charges for services, and I did skip over, well, grants. This has been mentioned in the past, but we had a lot of grants that came in the early part of 21 for various trail work that was being done. And this year, we just haven't had that. It's just a timing issue. Charges for services, we're starting to catch up. You can see that the variance in April is still negative, but it's better than the variance was in March, and we're catching up. Year to date, we're ahead because, again, of timing of some entries that were made in January that obviously give us a positive variance.
Can I ask a question on the grants?
Yes.
So you said it's a timing issue. Do you think that it will even out by the end of the year, or was last year just a really, really good year where we got some very significant grants? And maybe you don't know, because
last year was a very good year.
So we won't necessarily be even.
Maybe not. It's not something we'd necessarily budget for. It's more of a cash in, cash out, like if we're doing a project, or if we know where the match is going to line up for it, where the Metro Parks would commit funds. But each year is very uniquely different, depending on an ask to Clean Ohio could be 800,000, could be 1.2. We've been very blessed with the National Fish NIFWF grants for our CHEERS study. So each year is a very different kind of rubric that gets put together.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
We look at other, and you've heard this in the past, we're still positive, and that's due primarily to the carbon offset credits that the Park District received, and so you're still seeing the impact of those. So total revenue, we're lagging a bit, I would say, timing and weather, and it's partially impacted by the timing of the grants, which Brian just spoke to. On the expense side, we can just take those as a whole. We're returning to pre-pandemic levels. Overall costs have increased over what they were 12 months ago because we're getting close to full staffing. But we also see increases in our operating costs, commodities, other things. That's no surprise to anyone with inflation and things like that. Everything else is just driving our costs up. So as we get back to more normalized levels and we wrestle with inflation like everyone is, we're going to see our costs this year above what they were last year.
Just a question, and maybe it's too soon, but do we have any sense that the inflationary factors are peaking or leveling or not, just not, nothing to draw from?
Nothing to draw from at this point. The only thing we do know is that the Fed has still priced in a couple more rate increases, but the hope is that those rate increases then will start to stymie inflation and bring it down.
Is there a period of time, a re, reaction period as a rule, or is this totally guesswork right now in this economy?
Commissioner, it'd be guesswork on my part. I would not want to give an opinion not being in the economy.
I think I knew the answer already.
Brian, how is the summer hire program, Brian?
The best I can say is there is a much better seasonal hiring this year than the previous year. Certainly, we had to increase our wages to be more cost competitive. In general, most of our areas have full complements. We're still lagging in our restaurant. If we still had a few more cooks and a few more of those other types in the service industry, we'd be in a little bit better shape. But going in, we're close to our 19 potential projections as they've kind of morphed into 2022.
Yeah, okay.
Still struggling.
We're still, yeah, I mean, there's still an opportunity to hire more seasonals for sure.
Did the foreign worker program work out?
Yep, they're all here. I know for sure 7 are here. Is the 8th here? So we're very close. They're coming from different countries. So we've got that all set up, and we will look to grow that program. We'll look to complement our trails program as well to continue to bolster that. So we're trying to find very unique ways to add clusters of people to do very specific things. So the 8 yeah. coming here will work directly for Dr. Kuhar here at the zoo and in the events and the coordination of guest services. And then we'll continue to try to find these niche groups, whether it's the youth conservation corps or summer workers for our trails program. But in general, most of our staffs are in pretty good shape.
You're good. Thanks.
That's good.
The last thing on the overview page I would point out is when you look at CapEx, we're up almost $2 million over last year. That's primarily, again, to the projects we were doing last year at this time. We were finishing a number of the trails with the Tiger Grants and the Winnie Park Bridge. This year, we've been doing some projects at the zoo. We had the administration building, but we still had more CapEx activity in the first 4 months last year than this year, primarily the trails. Okay. So now we'll go to some of the individual pages, the zoo. First, the negative overall variance in April was small, excuse me, was smaller than the March negative variance, again, impacted by weather. I'd mentioned earlier, Dr. Kuhar said, May is looking good so far. And when you look at the top, I did want to point this out, the general admissions, we are up over year to date. That is due to an adjustment that's always made in January for memberships that are paid in December. We're a cash basis payer. And so that's a timing issue. When you look at the expenses, again, we're getting near full staffing. So we're going to be running higher year to date. And I tended to focus on the year to date now that we're 4 months in. Year to date on salaries and on operations, that's the commodities costs and other things that we talked about. CapEx, when you look at construction expense, that's up primarily because the administration building, the zoo administration building has been finished. And so that's where the $666,000 was spent. Whereas in last year, they didn't have that big of a project going on early in the year. Overall, operations are improving, but not as good as last year at this point, but that's a theme throughout. And I know that they.
It's a zero on capital labor. What? I'm just curious why that's a line item or what it would have been in the past.
What it would have been in the past. I'm going to have to. I apologize, Commissioner. I'm going to have
to. What's your question?
The capital labor. Just I'm curious why it's zero across the board.
That would be our capital labor.
Correct. Yeah, if there was a capital chargeback, and it may not have been accounted for yet, it may be a push yet with finishing up the audit and finishing up the GFOA book and others, it may just not be distributed yet.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
And that's not an uncommon thing.
When you look at golf, here's an interesting story. Rounds. In 21, in the month of April, were almost 35,000 rounds of golf played. Rounds in the month of April this year, 20,000. Again, it snowed. That directly impacts the revenue. One of the things that, and I'll share, and I like to look at metrics. I use them in analysis. I was intrigued because the cost per round, the revenue per round last year was $9.96. The revenue per round this year was $13.68. I thought about that, and then I did bounce that off the staff. Part of that is when weather gets bad, I'm not an avid golfer. The avid golfers are still going to play, and they're going to play the higher, the courses that cost more to play. My wife and I recently, just this past week, played Little Match. She's a beginning golfer. So when you're playing more expensive courses, the revenue per round is going to go up. And I said, does that make sense? I go, yeah, that's probably what did happen. But in working with Damon, that's one of the things we want to start to look at is, what is our revenue per round? How much are we bringing in? And how are we really tracking rounds? Is a round 18 or is it 9 or some metric? And I think that will be helpful to those that are managing that operation, to Brian and to you, as we get some of those metrics to help look at that analysis. But we're down because of the 15,000 rounds.
The other thing too is the cart revenue. With owning the fleet of carts, that's got a full impact. And if the weather's bad, more people will ride than walk through the, so there's a balance of that as well.
Does the revenue per round include, like, if people buy stuff in the snack shop or, you know?
Those are separate revenue lines.
Okay.
And you'll see they're all down. You'll see the equipment rentals are down, which Brian just referred to, food service, pro services, driving range. Everything is down year to date. Food service is up because we had some events using the spaces that would help drive that. But if you look at those that are driven by weather, greens fees, equipment rental, merch sales, somewhat in driving range, they're all impacted by that. People not playing golf, playing those rounds.
Virtually all the costs are fixed.
Right? Yes.
Hardly anything that is variable.
Correct.
The weather's variable, Dan.
That's right.
Correct.
And so we, in the past, we would go through the individual lines. The story is just the weather. I did want to raise up one highlight as we look at the individual courses. You'll see Washington as highlighted. And that's one where the operating revenue this year, year to date, is up. It's the only course in our collection of courses where revenue is up. And so in digging a little bit deeper, they're just doing a great job there of giving lessons. The new pro is averaging about 20 lessons a week. They have the first tee program, as well as all of the academy classes are there. So Washington, when you look at things, you can say weather's not great, but I always like to pull out, what are we doing well? What can we learn from something that is where we want it to be? And it would be Washington, because they are beating last year's revenue for those reasons. Expenses, as the Commissioner Moore just pointed out, are somewhat fixed. So we have salary expenses and things. So expenses are up. The revenue's not as great, but it is a course that's actually making money year to date.
I think the driving range is packed too, because people can't get out and play. So they're just going. I've been there a couple of times and it's been full.
Commissioner, you're correct.
But, you know, to the point on why, that's really much more the teaching course. If anything, that would be one where if it broke even or even subsidized, it wouldn't be bad.
Yeah. And the first tee program goes on even if it's raining. So,
yes.
They're spending.
Is the first tee, is that children's golf, or is that
that's trying to build interest in the game with, I think, younger golfers?
I go there regularly.
In enterprise, concessions, year to date, April was better, but it's down year to date due to weather again. April was down in 21. Primarily, this is when where timing really gets funny. In 21, COVID was really starting to take effect. And so that's why April of 21 would be down in concessions, whereas this year we're ahead, but year to date we're down because we've just had bad weather in March and April. But you can see April was a good month. We're just impacted by weather, as was pointed out to me when I asked about this. I said, walk me through kind of what we see. They said, well, Merwin's is the best example. On a sunny day, packed. Non-sunny day, not packed. 11 sunny days, 50 non-sunny days, it makes it hard. But as the weather gets better, those numbers are only going to get better. Dock rentals are up in April, but they're down year to date due to timing. And I do have a note because I know it was asked in previous meetings. East 55th is full, but the revenue there lags a bit, again, just due to timing. But the East 55th marina is full. And when you look at other revenues, we scan through here. We'll get to, well, other revenues that non-highlighted, that's up for the month, up year to date, and that's primarily due to parking and increased activity. People are parking. People are out and about now. COVID's not what it was before, so.
Brian, at East 55th, how many people want docks but can't get them?
We've had anywhere from a 50 to 150 person waiting list, and
yeah.
Joe, I don't know what the, it's over 100 for sure.
Oh, wow. God. Okay.
Yeah, there's still people that, you know, they move. Most of the yacht clubs, from what we're made aware, is that they're full as well. So right now there's more demand for boaters looking to move into either a new area or move to a different location. So it's still very, very.
If we looked at the math of dredging further out on the 55th Street inside, would we be able to justify the economics of that with the rental of more docks?
The answer is potentially yes. It's just it's a capacity number of depth of slip, you know, depending on what size of boat would be the one that would be the most desirable to come in. Is it, you know, the 17 to 25 foot, is the 25 to 30 foot? And then you have to look at electrical capacity and upgrade and all of the other things. So there's a bunch of factors that actually go into it. We're looking at that as part of kind of the next phases with our CHEERS program, potentially community sailing center, all the things that we're moving into. What does that look like in the basin?
Yeah, well, one thing, the elasticity of demand for docks, I think, is fairly stiff. So I think you could raise the price if you could justify the economics. Because right now, I've forgotten what it is, but it's de minimis, the cost of renting a dock at all these places. And if there's more, if there's 150 people that want docks, might maybe worth looking at what the numbers, how the numbers would shake out.
Yeah, I think in general, we try to put ourselves in the pricing model that puts us in a very competitive stay. But I also am remindful, you know, that amenities are commensurate with, you know, the price of, you know, what you're paying for. The other thing on the dock right now, I think if you ordered one, you're probably 18 to 24 months out, just from a supply chain. And the other thing in the basin where we potentially have been looking at, that's where the fuel dock is currently staged. So it's not just as simple as, oh, well, we'll just, you know, send one out. It's you've really got to look at the full logistics of turning radius and everything else. So it is a math equation for sure.
Do we have a sense of the demographics, users?
Oh my gosh, it's all across the board, depending on whether you're at Emerald Necklace, whether you're at Wildwood, whether you're at East 55th.
WES is pretty broad spectrum. That's good.
But it's not like Detroit. I mean, Detroit has more boats per lineal foot of shoreline than probably any city in the country, including Miami. I mean, it's very intense. But I think with 150 people, with 150 waiting lists, it's probably getting close to taking a look at, because you always have to have a waiting list. No waiting list, it means you're wasting money.
Yeah, but you're serving a different role as well. There's another dimension to that.
Yeah.
Yes, points well taken. We do study it for sure.
And this is the individual breakdown of the individual operations and enterprise. And the one I'll raise up is Merwin's. You can see year to date how the weather just dramatically impacted their operating revenue at the top. That's highlighted. The marinas, East 55th is highlighted primarily because it's down year to date, but again, it's full. And that was timing in terms of revenues paid in December of last year. The other two marinas you can see were okay, lagging a bit, but overall the enterprise operations, as the weather gets better and warms up, that will come back. And we mentioned parking. Again, I like to raise up what I consider to be positive stories. Hey, what are we doing that we want to learn from? And the chalet and parking are two that, as you can see, are just knocking it out of the park on the revenue side, keeping revenues pretty steady. In fact, keeping expenses pretty steady. And parking, there's very little expense. If we could do more of that, you'd want to do that all day long. But that's doing extremely well. And that's everything I have on finance at a high level. I didn't know if there were any other questions or if there were any questions.
No, that's real. No problem. Thank you.
If I could, in closing, I would be remiss if I didn't thank Gary Butzbach, who served as the interim CFO and is our controller, who did a fabulous job while there was no CFO. And has been just a super support as I've transitioned in.
That's good to
hear. Today was supposed to be the day when we met with our auditors. We have a final draft of the audit report, but through no fault of Gary or the staff, They'll be here in June. I wanted to have a chance to read through the audit myself, being new, and so I asked to have that delayed 1 month.
That makes sense.
The audit committee will be in June, and then they'll be here to report to you. But we have a draft of the financials that are done. I'm just spending time making sure that I'm comfortable with everything, and that's all I have.
Thank you.
And echoing Wade's sentiments, we're looking forward to Gary getting a little time off with his family. He's put in the yeoman's work, as well as the rest of the staff, Renee and Barbara, Irina, the whole entire team, Judy, Amanda, just done a fantastic job. The first action item after the swearing in of our new patrol officers, lieutenants, and captain is the 2022 budget adjustment number 5. Wade?
Thank you, Brian. Budget adjustment number 5 is for $392,552. This is to appropriate monies we already have. It's revenues. It's previously unappropriated monies, and I would just ask for approval.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is establishing the date of the hearing for the proposed 2023 tax budget. Ohio revised code requires the Board of Park Commissioners to set the date for the public hearing for the proposed 2023 tax budget. We are asking to set the meeting for June 16th of 2022. We're asking for the recommended action to set that meeting. Oh, I'm sorry, that'll be approved in the June 16th meeting. We're asking for the tax budget meeting on June 3rd. I apologize.
I'm like, wait a second.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I don't have my glasses on. I should probably put them on. I need them. Increase for propane for various locations. This was last seen at the board on October 14th of 2021. This was in the Ohio State Cooperative Program, competitively bid from items from 10 to 50,000. We have gone over that number from an additional consumption and price standpoint. The board did view this back in, again, October 14th of 2021. We're asking for a revised consumption for the increase in propane. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 12.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the amendment contract 1550 professional services agreement. This is for Garfield Park Pond and Stream Restoration Project. This is with the GDP group. This is in an effort to keep the processes moving, necessary engineering services relative to the construction administration phase of the pond, the stream restoration. Cleveland Metro Parks are supporting with our architects for all of the different various work that we need to continue to do to bring this project forward. We're looking for a revised amount in amendment number 1 for 182,020. Recommended action falls in the bottom mid portion of 14.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the construction guaranteed maximum price. This is number 3. This is 1558 construction manager at risk. This is for the construction of the pond. This is to Neroni and Sons. We saw this back in November of 2020. We continue to work forward. This is just a progression of where we're at with site conditions, the haul road, how we've been able to kind of pay as we go, working with the contractor for stockpiling, the fill, the clay liner, the berm. We basically worked very well with the contractor. This is a continuation. So this is amendment number 3 in the amount of $619,332.87.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is amendment number 2, contract 1541, professional services agreement. This is for the Gorilla Rainforest Addition, schematic design and design development. As we continue to move forward, we are trying to make sure that we can meet or start at the appropriate times. We have been working with VAA originally on amendment number 1. May of 22, we were able to bring on the Albert M. Higley Company to work as a partnership to work through all of the complex engineering services. We are looking at performing specific design services in the scope, looking at now deeper into the mechanical, the structural, the kitchen components, the architecture. And so this is a continuation with Van Aken Hawkins Architectural Group and the total not to exceed 3171458.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the contract construction, or it's 1543 construction manager at risk for the Gorillas. This is the guaranteed maximum price. This is again for the Albert Higley Company to continue to move with us as VAA is doing their work so that we can get competitive design schematics. design development, construction documents as we're looking to get this, this project off the ground. So this is the amendment to the GMP with the Albert M. Hinckley Company in amount not to exceed $164,500, which is additional $21,500.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Demolition remediation of 3700 Wildlife Way. The Cleveland Metro Parks Board of Park Commissioner authorized the purchase last year. We continue to work with granting sources. This is also an ask for a lease amendment. The owner had the right to be there through May 31st, but is asked to extend that based on market conditions and availability of being able to move the equipment out. So we're asking for two variables in this, one that goes through August 31st and one that would continue a price through the end of the year. And then we're also looking at a revised grant application for the Brownfield Remediation Grant Program. We were not awarded in the first round. We are looking at how to get a portion of the required match as we're moving this forward through the Brownfield Remediation Act Program. We're actually asked to resubmit. So it's cleaning up two opportunities, one for the grant and one for the lease extension.
So basically, extension's not a bad thing because we need time to.
Correct.
Yeah.
It actually is mutually beneficial. We're working very hard with the Weir Risk Company to not put them at a disadvantage.
Did we do a phase two on that property?
Yeah, we've got one little area that needs some work.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Recommended action falls in the mid to bottom portion of page 20.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We have the award of bids. We have a number of them. Cleveland Metro Parks and Basin Plant Control. We'll continue to work that program. Fuel and heat oil. Euclid Creek Greenway Phase 1. Sean, anything you want to say on that one real quick? 6632. It's a big project that we're moving forward on. I just wanted to give you a chance to talk today and see.
Thanks. Can I use the clicker, please?
No.
Yeah.
Good morning, commissioners. I will keep this brief. We are here asking for the award of phase one of the Euclid Creek Greenway. Phase one goes from Euclid Creek Parkway up to Euclid. We then will be in front of you for phase two, which will go through the Euclid Central Middle School site from Euclid to Chardon Road, and then phase three from Chardon Road up to St. Clair. And then we have the funding through the RAISE grant for phase four planning. So that'll take us to the lakefront. A lot of momentum with the Euclid Creek Greenway Connector. This phase, like many of our other projects, we have about 80% of outside money that pays for construction. The market's becoming tight. We only received two bids on this one. So we see what is happening. We're reading what's happening. We're happy to have a very good contractor that fits within the budget for this project.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Very good.
Data analytics and customer platform through IT, various zoo grains, fuel and heat oil. We're also supply of a new chiller to our chalet down in Millstream Run. It is over 50 years old. Our team has done an amazing job keeping it going to this point. It is a staple of winter activity through Cleveland Metro Parks. It is a process to actually get it built. And so we're ordering it now with the anticipation that we will hopefully, fingers crossed, that we will be able to receive it. If not, we'll be able to hopefully get our other one still going. I think we're in our 52nd year of that one. 52nd year.
That dicey. Wow.
It has worked very well for a lot of years. So it's definitely had a very good life with the Metro Parks. Recommended action for all of these award of bids, RFPs, co-ops, and single sources on top portion of page 21.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Vouchers and payroll?
You're on.
This is this first one.
I'm sure I was reading.
You were doing so well up until this point.
Yeah.
Lot of pages.
Vouchers and payroll. Am I on page 39?
35.
You're right.
35.
Resolution number,
Brian.
Would you like me to do it? 22-02 falls on page 35 for the approval of vouchers and payroll in accordance with the Ohio Revised Code.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And then we have a second one.
Would you like to do the second one, Wade?
No, I got the second. Thank you.
36.
Okay, well, move for approval of I'm going to ask for approval of vouchers totaling $599.16.
Resolution 22-05-063.
Move to approve.
Second.
You.
Dan is today.
Well, that's right.
Favor.
Sorry.
Aye, thank you.
And Dan Moore abstains.
Do we have any public comments today? Good morning, Marty. How are you? Good, thank you.
Still COVID restrictions. We still have that, yeah, that fewer people. So staff, essentials, only essential.
No. I was just thinking of compared to when the families.
That's why we were going to keep them.
That's why we let them go.
A different issue. Okay. As I still await the budget book for 2022, let's address the delays and excuses I've been given. Yes, there was a change in CFO at the end of last year. But when Dave Coons left at the end of January 2016, that year's budget book was still on time. I expect that Bill Chorba also left matters in good order and that the financial portion was complete or nearly so. Even back when Metro Parks ran on only a temporary budget through the first quarter, they still got the budget book done. Budget numbers are due at the county financial office by the end of March, I believe, without extensions. In November, it was said that the GFOA submittal was due 90 days after budget approval. Approval here was December 16th, 2021. Expecting to receive the book at the March 18th board meeting, I was told it was not ready. First a 1 month extension, then another week, then through the end of May. Apparently, the GFOA submittal is delayed. Here we are, 2/3 of the way through May, and the latest extension, presumably from GFOA, runs to the end of the month. Because I was told there are still gaps being filled in, I requested and was denied a copy of the draft, which does qualify as a public record. GFOA's own website states, the Popular Annual Financial Reporting Awards Program was created in 1991 to enhance the quality of popular annual financial reports specifically designed to be readily accessible and understandable to the public. Designed specifically to be readily accessible would include, I presume, in a timely manner, not halfway through the budget year. GFOA Ohio board meeting is a week from today with a national meeting early June. Is Metro Parks sending representatives to that meeting? How can Metro Parks apply for an award when the product is not even completed? Do other entities, mostly smaller and less affluent, get similar opportunities to fill in gaps? The budget book is certainly a significant undertaking, though less so now than when Bob Miller first created it. His example has been followed in subsequent years and by others. The format exists and is updated with the current year's information and entries. Given the financial, technical, and personnel resources available to the park system, there really is no excuse for this delay. It disrespects both the public and the GFOA itself. If the basic task of meeting accounting and submittal deadlines fails, and if public accessibility is blocked, then surely no award is deserved. Thank you.
If I can, commissioners, I'll share what's happening with the budget book. And I want to clarify a few things. The Metro Parks has a budget in place. You've approved that. The budget book is that budget along with the other information submitted to the GFOA, of which I'm a past officer, to improve budgetary practices across the country. We're a collaborative group, what I would call the public sector finance professionals. Again, that was delayed 1 month at my request. Again, being a new CFO, it has no bearing on staff or gaps. I wanted a chance to read through the budget book since my name would be affiliated with that. There was a reference to PAFR, which is the Popular Annual Financial Report. That is in no way related to the budget. The PAFR takes your annual financial audit, your ACFR, annual comprehensive financial report, and puts it in a more simplified format that then can be distributed to the public who don't want to read a complete audit report. And that will, the ACFR will be submitted to the GFOA for consideration, and then a PAFR is developed so that the taxpayers of Cuyahoga County and Hinckley Township can follow what we've done, what actions you've overseen, and what Brian has led. So all of those things will be done. There's full disclosure, but things have been delayed briefly at my request. So if there's any responsibility for the delay, I would take responsibility for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will move into information briefing items and policy extended reality. I would love to introduce Anthony Joy and our special guest this morning. Very nice media coverage with our partnership at UH, and we'll go through it this morning.
Thank you, commissioners. It's my pleasure to introduce Elizabeth Bagley. She's our fellow from Cleveland Foundation. So this year we got a Cleveland Foundation fellow, and part of her job this year was to kind of work and engage in our virtual reality program and our Trail View program, which you'll hear about shortly. So I will pass it off on to Elizabeth. Thank you.
Good morning. As Anthony mentioned, my name is Elizabeth Bagley. I'm here with the Cleveland Foundation. I've been here about 8 months, so I wanted to share with you all what I've sort of been working on in that time. And as Anthony mentioned, it's mostly fallen under the extended reality field. So I'm going to start off and just explain a little bit what extended reality is. So that's generally an umbrella term that just kind of discloses the opportunity to expand and transform our physical space with the help of technology. Generally, there are three main subsets. The first being augmented reality. So that's going to be adding to our physical space with the help of technology. One example that we have already here at the Metro Parks is some projection mapping. So this is our topo map at West Creek. Just a really plain piece of physical space, but then through the act of projecting, we can animate and augment it. This also is over at West Creek. It's our sand table. The next one is virtual reality. So this is a complete immersion in a new reality without leaving your space. So you go to the Bahamas, but you're still here in Ohio. We've had a lot of success with that here at the Metro Parks with our partnership with area hospitals, most specifically with Seidman. They have had this program going for a little bit of time now, and they've served over 80 people with our virtual reality headsets. So we provide them with the headsets and the content, so bringing our parks to people who maybe can't access them, like if you're in the hospital. And finally, mixed reality. So that's merging the real world with the technological. Generally, that's through use of things like Microsoft HoloLens. You can put something in there, like an architectural model, and display it on this table, or go out to a site and project it using these glasses so you can like see exactly what it's going to look like. So the things I've specifically been working on while I'm here is expanding our virtual reality programming. It started back in about 2018, but then COVID happened and a lot of things halted. So I came in and sort of started revamping it. We're working on expanding the current 360 video content that we have and expanding it beyond just our current headsets and adding it to newer technology, because as we know, technology changes quickly and you don't want to get behind. And I've also been working on expanding it beyond just 360 degree video into educational components. So the first project that we're working on is our BVR. We're going to go in and with a combination of 360 degree video inside of one of our hives at North Sugar Inn Reservation and some realistic animated modeling, we're going to work on educating the public about what the life of a bee is like. You're going to be down to the size of a bee and just get to explore and learn. And then I've also been working on our trail view project. So think Google Street View, but with all of our trails. So I started that over the winter. So we have about 14 miles of trails done across 7 reservations currently. And then now that we're back to nice weather and leafy trees, we'll get picked back up with that. So with that, I just want to kind of demonstrate a couple of these things and then leave some time for questions.
Anthony, did you name it BVR? Mm-hmm. Did you name that?
Yeah, so this is what it would look like if you put on one of these headsets and you were walking through this, it's called Fall Walk. It's at our Euclid Creek Reservation. And this is what the guest would see. It's really nice. You're just looking around and you're just propelled forward naturally. This is a popular experience because it's a little bit more active. You're moving, you're walking. And then this is over at Brookside, obviously with our cherry blossoms. Again, just kind of the view of what it would look like inside of the headset. This one's really popular because it takes an experience that you, if you miss it, you know, that really brief window where these cherry blossoms bloom, you have the opportunity to see these year round. Plus it's just very relaxing and beautiful. So I think that's a reason why a lot of patients enjoy that as well. I think we have one other video.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't get it wrong.
Okay, well, so the other video was just kind of giving you an overview of what the trail view trails look like. So it was just showing that we have, you can look around and you can click forward, like you're walking along the trail, stop, look around in 360 degrees. And then you can switch from like the picture view to like a map view. So you can see what it looks like when you're walking along, and you can select from there, like, oh, I know that I'm starting in the middle of this trail. How does that look? So it kind of gives guests the opportunity, one, to increase their wayfinding capabilities, but then also, you know, I'm going out to Brookside. I don't know which trail I want to go on. Let me kind of see which ones they have. Or, you know, I'm going on a winter hike. What would be a good reservation to go to that has really beautiful views and allows them to kind of see that ahead of time so they can plan out their hike?
So for the BVR, do you have to wear the headphones or the headset, or will we have it like online where anybody can pull it up and kind of be the bee?
Yeah, so for right now, the plan is we were going to bring these to our nature tracks so that they can kind of bring it out to the community and anyone can use them, but it all would be inside of the headset at this time.
Yeah. Got it.
How would you take this and have it more broadly available on the internet to people that would like to access it at home?
Yeah, so the Oculus Quest 2, which is the headset that I'm holding right here, was the most sold Christmas or holiday gift this past year. So we're hoping that we can expand the use of these types of apps to the public by putting it in like the Oculus Quest store so people can have access to that at home or
but how do you get the data to populate the headset? Is there enough bandwidth on the web to be able to get it?
Yeah, so like on like YouTube, sometimes they have like 360 degree VR experiences, so that's something that we could do as well potentially,
but we're not doing it now.
No.
So if someone wants to see it in the hospital, you bring a computer with you that has it's a ton of data, isn't it?
So we just have them. So we provided them with the headsets, and then it's called sideloading. We sideload the app to the headset, and so the app is already in the headset, and then all of the video data is offloaded to a cloud space, and then they have them downloaded onto the headset as they use them.
So you could conceivably do this in your home?
If we provided access to the app to the public, yes.
Which, go ahead, Anthony. Yeah, so you're ahead of us just a little bit.
Yeah. So right now there is an actually download.
I think come to the mic, please.
I should know that out of all people. So
for the we currently have a mobile app right now, so you can actually download that on your iPhone. It's a VR app, and then if you have headsets at home, you can actually just put your iPhone in it and then watch some of those experiences. Now, the thing is, a lot of people are doing that virtual reality from those mobile apps. So what this is why this Oculus that is one of the huge gifts. So people can create apps in these stores, and then you can make them free. You can charge them a dollar, whatever you need to do. And then you can build an app and then put your own content in them. And it just downloads it from the web right to the headset. So it's already fully flooded store. I mean, my kids use them. I mean, so the bandwidth is there and all the pieces are there. So we're actually building an app to see if we can make sure it works with the Oculus.
I see. And that's the Oculus 2, did you say?
Oculus Quest 2.
Quest 2.
So we're in the process of it, Dan. I think one of the thing with the content that we have, is there viewing for free? Is there a fee? You know, so we're trying to figure out exactly how the content that we have is so rich that you can't find anyplace else. So we're trying to make sure that, we stay true to the partnership with UH and Metro with, you know, the cancer treatments. But then is there another way to actually move it? And that's the space that we're trying to work in right now.
So would you try to make it so that it more or less funds itself? Is that the idea, potentially?
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Very good. Like a
Christmas gift for you.
Do you want to give? Yeah. Is that one on?
No.
No.
Yeah.
Show.
Yeah.
Very good.
Display only.
Thank you
very much. Thank you. Very interesting.
So from going from 2022 back to when William Stinchcomb, founder and City of Cleveland Parks engineer, put forth his idea for an outer ring of parks. He was inspired by the original parks that ring the city over the past number of decades. We've got some of the original city parks that moved over into Cleveland Metro Park. So without further ado, our historian and archivist, Judy McKeegan.
Good morning. Thank you, Brian. Good morning.
Morning.
So, as usual, I'm going to try to cram into just a few minutes, you know, what is a very long, rich history. And I chose to pick the city parks that are now part of course, our metro parks. So that does not include some of the other city parks that would have been under Stinchcomb's purview when he was a city parks engineer. But this is a map of the ring of parks that surrounded the Cleveland city, that were our city parks that, of course, inspired him to say we need an outer ring. So it's interesting to me, when you first glance at this, it almost looks like a Metro Parks map, right? But of course, it's not. The parks in order that we took over them are Garfield and Brookside and Washington Park. And then, of course, our lakefront parks, Edgewater over on the west side and Gordon Park over on the east side. And you could see that this leaves out a few city parks that were around. And one of the things that is interesting is that all the way down there to Shaker Lakes and the what is now sort of the Rockefeller Park Cultural Gardens and Wade Park there in the middle, there was talk about connecting all of them, and that's kind of what you see there. So even back then, they were all about connections, right? And speaking of connections, how did you get to a lot of these city parks? Because these city parks came into existence in the 1890s. There was Lakeview Park earlier in the 1870s, but these parks began under what was called the Second City Park Board, and the streetcars were the way that you got around into in Cleveland, and you got into these parks, first horse-drawn and then eventually electric. So these were streetcar parks right from the beginning, and it just stopped working on me, of course. Sean, did you touch this? All right, there we go. I'm going a little bit backwards before we talk about the individual parks. I just want to remind you that in 1897, they changed several names in the parks. Newburgh Park became Garfield Park. Brooklyn Park became Brookside Park. The reason for this, as you see, they want to rid them of the flavor of sectionalism. So they wanted you to know that you could go to any of these parks, even if you weren't from Newburgh or Brooklyn, that these were all city parks. So, starting with Gordon Park, because this is actually the oldest of the parks that we have, this is the bathhouse at Gordon Park, which I love this picture. And Gordon Park was a gift from William J. Gordon. He was a very, very successful industrialist in Cleveland. He was responsible for the first shipment of iron ore through the that came into Cleveland through the new, at that time, Sault Ste. Marie Canal back in 1850s. He was a grocer, but that means, of course, a importing wholesale grocer. He was in charge of banks and many, many other things, and he was a philanthropist. And in the 1870s, he bought this land here, and I deliberately did this one where it's on top of, because you can see the nature preserve, that the lakefront nature preserve, to give you a clue of where you are. So you can see that he had all of this land here. His house was actually down here, all the way down here in St. Clair. But then he also would build a house up here. So this was all his land, and he began to turn it into parkland. And he opened this parkland up even while he still owned it. People would come into this and drive along these carriage drives and enjoy the views of the lake. And then in his will in 1892, he donated all of this land to the city with the caveat that it always be called Gordon Park. So the city, of course, took over the work that he had been doing and continued to create more carriage drives, more paths, and of course built this lovely bathhouse where you could rent a bathing suit and go swimming and change into your bathing suit if you owned your own, and get some concessions and all the kinds of things we do today at bathhouses. You could see, and I don't remember whether I... let me go back one. You can see that the bathhouse is up here. This is Doane Creek. So this is where Doane Creek came through. It's all culverted now, of course. Went up through there, and people ask me where that was. That's basically the nature preserve. So the land where it was is now, the place where it was is now part of the nature preserve.
That's been expanded out though, right? So the original bathhouse would have been further inland.
It would have been buried under what is now that land. Yes, yeah. The land was extended out over where Doane Creek entered into the water, the lake area there.
These are great pictures.
Oh, I don't. They're mostly postcards. So they are a little photoshopped, as they did with postcards back then. They didn't call it that, but that's sort of what they did. But they're beautiful. So this was, I can't quite figure out, they call it the canal in Gordon Park. Yes. I think it was basically Doane Brook and the way it went through the park, and they had done so many man-made stuff with it that it looked like a canal rather than a creek. Going over to Edgewater Park then on the other side, because this was one of the next city parks that was created. This is a picture of the bathhouse that William Stinchcomb designed in 1912. So this is a little bit later than the beginnings of the park. This park was not donated. This park, however, used to belong to a man named Jacob Perkins. He worked with his neighbors, and he also sold land to the City Parks Board. He was on the City Parks Board. He was on the County Park Board. He never ended up on our Metro Parks Board because he was getting older by then and had kind of retired. But this is him in the middle there. So that's Jacob Perkins, was one of the wealthiest men in Cleveland from the time he was 15 years old, and owned land all around. Pretty much anywhere we've got metro parks, he owned some of that land at one time. His grandfather started the city of Akron, Simons Perkins. So, his parents, his father was involved in the railroads. So Jacob was, again, very, very big landowner, and Cleveland Hopkins Airport was part of his too, but he was also on the City Parks Board, as I said, and he worked with his neighbors, and they started to call it Perkins Park, and he said, that's very kind of you, but let's call it Edgewater instead, because that's more what it is. So he did not want the park named after him, as Mr. Gordon did on the other side. All of these city parks originally had dance pavilions or picnic pavilions, but they were used for dancing, and they charged 3 cents a dance. That was a revenue thing, so something we might think about. the mayor officiate opened it up, and notice it says that the Clevelanders shiver to music because it was cold that year in the beginning. This is also designed, this is not designed by Stinchcomb. This is a little bit earlier pavilion over at Edgewater. But it would have looked very similar to the pavilion that is still there at Edgewater. There was that style. And of course, bathing was the big thing to do at Edgewater as well. These are older than and later than. So the one, the color postcard, and I know it's blurry because some of these postcards I just found online, and I just grabbed them because they're so cool. That's the original bathhouse that was there like in 1905. And I don't think you can see it on this, but it had a slide into the water. And then but in the 1930s, you could still rent bathing suits. And that's what I just wanted to show you because I think that's amazing. And they said Sea of Sea. City of Cleveland, so you didn't steal the darn thing and take it home because they were so attractive you might want to do that. Yeah.
Now, back at that time, there was probably no sewage treatment.
That's the 1930s. So yeah, there's definitely that one. The 1905 one, they did chlorinate the lake. They tried to chlorinate the bathing areas starting like in 1912. Literally,
and how do they do that?
I have no idea.
We actually know. Oh. They actually put pipes into the water with chlorinated areas. One of the swimming areas that was over by Edgewater Beach, where the current is, there were piping chlorinated water into the system to make it cleaner.
Yeah. So clearly they didn't have sewage treatment.
Yeah, our sewage treatment.
No, the CSOs were the treatment. Yeah, wait for storm event, and it would just flush out the system.
Yeah. The idea was you flushed it into the lake and it would dissipate. So, but I mean, we've been working with sewage treatment for a long time. It's a whole another story, but that goes back to the 1870s and 80s that they started thinking about that at least. On to Brookside Park. So Brookside Park, unlike the others we've talked about, was not a gift from any wealthy individual that owned a lot of land. It was pieces parted together from various local landowners that had smaller pieces of land to build a park on what they called the south side at that time, on the southwest of Cleveland, west of the river. I love this one because it's a nighttime view, but again, postcards were often photoshopped. Basically, it was like, what do you want? Here, we take a picture. Do you want it at night? Do you want it in the day? Do you want us to take the people out of the boats? Do you want to put people in boats? So they did all kinds of things because I don't think these people were out there on at night on the boats, though they could have been. I picked this picture because that is the pavilion on the lake at Brookside, what was then Brookside, what is now the Waterfowl Lake at the zoo. And that building is in approximately the same place that our Stillwater Pavilion is. So I think that that's kind of a cool roundabout way of saying, you know, people still dance there. So,
yeah.
These are more scenes at Brookside. Down in the lower right-hand corner, that is the Waterfowl Lake. When it opened up, Stinchcomb did have a hand in designing that. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have your park right by the lake, like Edgewater and Gordon, you built a lake because those were very important parts of these original parks because you strolled, you know, alongside them or you boated on them. Of course, Brookside is known for baseball. And this is that old baseball area that became very, very famous for amateur baseball in the early 1900s. Now it's upside down. So that's Denison. So this is North. And it's just this drawing, notice, by William Stinchcomb of how they're going to design it, that the hillside is reserved for seating. Mm-hmm. There's the baseball diamond. Here's a track for track meets. I don't think that ever came to fruition. I kind of turned it around and put it in the spot so that you can see where it is on today's map. That gives you an idea how to figure out how that was oriented. So I turned it upside down. So there's this hillside where the people sat. There's the baseball diamonds. And there's what would have been the track. And there's the railroad. And you can go over there and look at it. It's kind of cool. This is one of the pictures, one of the many pictures of the people at these stadiums. It is absolutely fascinating how many people crammed these hillsides to stand. They didn't build seats until 1912. And even then, more people stood to watch these baseball games. This is the famous one from 1915, 115,000 people.
Oh,
attended this game.
I don't even know how they saw what was going on. There's no microphones telling them who's doing what. But yeah,
is that photoshopped or is that the real?
No, that's a real one.
Two panels.
That one's real. It's put together to make a panoramic, but it's
so
real.
What do you think the population of Cleveland was? And well, it was pretty. Yeah, it was
They're all there.
Well, it was, that's it. There they are. Well, and this is, we were the fifth largest city at the time in the country. So, and, but I apologize, I don't know the exact numbers, how many people are in Cleveland. It began to decline not long after this.
An amazing picture.
That is. And just so you know that not only baseball went on there, here is a picture of the Maypole dancing that went on there.
Big deal.
To welcome in them and crown the May Queen, yes, and do Maypole dancing.
Looks like there wasn't much to do back then.
And of course, starting in 1907, and it took a few years, and by 1912, the zoo had moved over from Wade Park over to Brookside. And interestingly enough, Stinchcomb said it's the best place to put the zoo because it's a broad valley. He goes, yeah, sometimes it floods, but you know, we'll deal with that. So, but, and we have over the years. And that is the original building, the original zoo building where most all the, and that was our first elephant mini.
Now the first zoo, where was it before it moved there?
There's Wade Park.
Wade Park
right, like by the art museum.
Okay. And then who's, was that a Cleveland Zoo?
That was Cleveland Zoo. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then it reverted back to the Natural History Museum at some point.
At some point, much later. Yeah. In the 1940s or 1930s and 40s. Yeah.
Okay.
It was a Cleveland City Zoo till the 1930s. And then the Zoological Society came in the 50s. So, yeah. So lots of changes. I'm just kind of showing the beginnings, a lot of these, because beginnings are fun to me. So Garfield Park, again, this one was pieced, parted together from several farmers that owned land or people that owned farms in that area. There was a big debate. They started clamoring in 1895. They wanted a park for the Southside people in Newburgh. And there was much discussion of where it was going to end up. And this is where it ended at what we today know as Garfield Park. And
so going back to that, where was the pond in that picture?
You know what? The pond wasn't there yet. The pond was, they began to create the pond. They used to flood it for ice skating in the winter, but then they began to create the pond about 1908, 1909. It's hard to figure out from the records. By 1912, it shows up. It begins to show up on maps, the one pond. And by like 1915, the ponds were open and looking more like this. Okay, so the one down in the lower corner, that's the older one showing the original boathouse. And then in the 1930s during the WPA, they built this boathouse here. Okay. And it's pretty much in the same spot. Sean, am I correct? Yeah, pretty much in the same spot where the new one is going to go. So, when that gets done, which we are all looking forward to because it's going to be so cool. So, the pond was very popular for boating and fishing. This was not swimming. And so, I forgot I have this one in here. This is just the first picnic shelter. It was made with a thatched roof.
Yeah.
It's the only one that we ever did in the city parks. And I just think it's fascinating. I'm not exactly sure where it is, but I think it was at our Windy Ridge picnic area, thereabouts. It shows briefly on a map at one point in time and that Windy Ridge area, which is right here and which became the pool. You can still kind of see the outline of what would have been the swimming pool when it was there. Garfield was the first city park, 1916. The pool opened there and was very popular for many, many years. Notice that there was a bathhouse there. It's not as elegant as some of the ones down by the beach. And they also had they did put sand in and create an artificial beach for the swimming pool, because people were used to that. And our last park, and this is the oddest one to talk about. This is Washington Park. And you know, all these photographs with all of these postcards I've been able to find for all the other places. And I've even bought some of them over the years and put them in my collection. But the only postcard for many, many years I've been able to find at Washington Park is this bridge that they were so proud of that they built around 1908. And so that bridge no longer exists, and it's the only postcard I've been able to find until 2 weeks ago when I found this one of people dancing again on the lawn at Washington Park with a little the band there in the back. And so that notice that even then, ladies, anybody remember like in junior high, you had to dance with the other girls because the guys didn't want to. So yeah, I see the guys hanging out in the back there and the ladies dancing together. Yeah. Some things never change. The other thing about Washington Park that's odd is that for many, many years, it was a private picnic ground called Bailey's Park, and then it was called Forest City Park under a new management in like 1889. So this is from like the 1880s. And there was a lake, there was a bridge. This is probably a Burke Brook, I think, was dammed up to make this little artificial lake. And so you can see on the left-hand side that bridge that we were just looking at in that picture. You can see the little lake. You can see that it's called Forest City Park. Down below, it's called Washington Park. The city had begun to buy that land. They bought the land on the southern portion. And this was going to be the crowning jewel of all of the Cleveland City parks. They said this was central. It was going to be our central park. That was the idea. It never quite panned out that way for who knows what reasons. It wasn't bought till 1900. It's one of the later parks. And then by 1912, they had purchased that Forest City Park area as well. And then things changed. I don't know whether it was World War I, whether it was just changing in all kinds of things. And little by little, the ravine that you could see, there are all these bridges, was filled in, and that beautiful postcard showing that bridge they were all so proud of, that's the bridge right there. I was just driving down there the other day. There's no bridge because that is completely flat land. Everything was filled in, and of course it became our Washington golf course. So you can kind of see that lake is up there sort of between the fourth and the fifth hole up there. That's kind of up in that area there. That's where the lake would have been, because that's where that bridge that where we saw the people boating. So that's Washington Park. It's just been kind of a quirky thing to research, because it's so different, so different nowadays. The one thing that's still there was, of course, the Maine. In 1898, the battleship Maine in the Havana Harbor blew up and precipitated the Spanish-American War. And around 1909, they pulled it up out of the water and they took the pieces, parts of it, and sent it all over the United States to city parks so that people could have a piece of the Maine to remember the Maine. This was how the mount was supposed to look. I don't know if that eagle ever landed, because this is a 1938 picture of it. It's called a conning tower, and that piece of the Maine there weighs over 6,000 pounds, just that little thing there. And that's the one that we got. It was opened to great fanfare. And then today it looks very similar. You can see it over there. So I don't know if they ever put that eagle on top and it disappeared, but I'm thinking maybe no, because it seems like it would have been there in 1938. Again, we entered World War I right after that, and it may have just kind of gone by the wayside because we had a new war to think about. So just as a reminder, a lot of things that they did at these, as Commissioner Moore said, there wasn't as much maybe to do back then, but you could go boating or at least sit by the water as these people up at Garfield are doing. You could go dancing or listen to band concerts. You could stroll in your beautiful white clothes, and you could go swimming. And of course, there were playgrounds. So all of these things we still do in the Metro Parks today. And as you know, little by little, these city parks decline for various reasons, and anybody you talk to is very, very happy with what the Metro Parks has done with them over the years. So I think we're keeping the legacy alive as best we can. So, thank you.
Brian, what jumps out at me on this whole thing is I would think Judy could do a YouTube presentation that would go, that would sort of trace the whole thing. I think it'd be fascinating. I bet a lot of people would look at it, and I would think it would be very positive for the image.
That would be fun. I do a lot of these programs out in the public, though, Commissioner.
Right, yeah.
I do a lot of the full-length programs, and they are very well attended. People love to hear about the Metro Parks.
Especially when you say they're Irish.
I did a program on the Irish neighborhoods, and 80 people showed up when I. So I said, I'm putting Irish in front of everything now.
Yeah.
Talk about Irish Edgewater, Irish Garfield, whatever it is, it's Irish because the Irish people will come out. We didn't even know I fed them scones.
That's sectionalism. I'm sorry.
On that note, Judy, thank you so much.
That was terrific.
Thank you.
It's interesting what's old is new. I mean, and Rose, you noted that, you know, the original, feature at the zoo is where Stillwater Place is. And, you know, those are the iconic areas. People want to be close to the water.
Yeah.
And when you look at what William Sinchko and our founder did, you know, we followed that riparian concept and we continue to embody that 105 years later. So congratulations to all that have had a hand in that. The next regularly scheduled meeting is June 16th at 8 a.m. We will have our audit meeting at that point in time. There is an executive session.
What will that be before the 8 o'clock? So 7:30 or 7?
6:30 for you, but yeah, everybody else. 7:30.
I may be a little late, but.
And before we do the motion, we just wanted to thank everyone who's involved in the successful prosecution of the black walnut tree. So you may have seen in this morning's paper that the two defendants did plea to felony, and they paid $20,000 so for restitution. And so thank you to, I want to publicly thank County Prosecutor Michael Maley, who took this very seriously and will help us in our, you know, further enforcement, because we have a lot of encroachments going on. So that was very important. And then Jen Greiser, who actually discovered the travesty, and then her work, and well as our surveyors and our real estate team. So, and then Marisa Marinella. So thank you to everyone who for that successful work and accountability. And now, do we have a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of purchase or acquisition of real property?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Debbie Berry?
Yes.
Bruce Rinker?
Yes.
Dan Moore?
Yes.
We'll not take any action in the executive session. We will be back to close out the meeting.
You're right.